How's it going, everybody? Brian Elvers and Dave Meltzer here, Wrestling Observer Radio. It is November 3, 2016, figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. Wednesday night here, and so we've got a lot of news to talk about, shows to review, and
more.
Did you see
the World Series?
I didn't see it, but I hear a 108-year streak is over.
Yeah, that's a long time, isn't it?
Can you imagine?
You should have seen the pop.
Oh, I did. I saw some clips of the insanity at the end.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. Yeah, I mean that's like one of like the Chicago Cubs, you know, never winning the World Series is like one of the things of like, you know, like
the world's ending. Well, hey, we got like, an election Tuesday too, so everything's falling into place.
What does the election have to do with everything? But the world's going to end because of the result of the election?
You never know.
God, can you imagine? I don't even want to talk about that. Other than I can think about like the night that you and I were at that affliction show and freaking Donald Trump, you know, made that speech and we're just going like every single thing he's saying is so full of shit. And now it's like he's like with a, you know, I mean, it looks at, you know, he actually could win. I mean, it's like he may not win, but it's like, this has been like the craziest election, because it's you know, all the stuff about, like, I don't think the election is the big reason football ratings are down, but it is a reason.
It is definitely a reason.
It is a reason. I mean, there's no doubt, because the cable news networks are way up, and it is a small part of why wrestling is down. It's not the big reason, but it is a small part. But, I mean, because when you think about it, everything that people want out of wrestling, it's like the freaking election speeches are like a million times better than wrestling.
Not even the speeches, but there have been storylines. There have been twists and turns. There's been go-home angles. Everything.
I know. I'm still waiting for like this big angle, you know, like on this coming Monday night, like right before, like something like major gets revealed on Monday night and it changes the whole thing.
Well.
And I don't know what it's going to be. But did you see the deal where... Trump, there's the friend of the Gambino family guy who Trump has always claimed he doesn't know, and then they found the footage at WrestleMania 4 on the WWE Network, and there's Trump sitting next to him at ringside at WrestleMania. The guy, he said he wouldn't even recognize him if the guy was in front of him, and there he is sitting right next to him at WrestleMania.
Man.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Well, we'll have more to talk about in the next couple days, but... let's talk about this cruiserweight show that they're adding. They found a way to get SmackDown to 3 hours.
I know, and now it's 3 hours on Tuesday. I mean, why couldn't they put that show on Wednesday like it was before? But, well, I mean, the one thing is, okay, so
you know what they should do?
I do know what they should do.
Okay, I'll tell you what I think they should do. They should tape the stupid show before SmackDown.
No shit.
Save it for Wednesday, and then everybody that loves talking smack can watch 2 hours of SmackDown, talking smack. There's your 3 hour block, and you got another show for Wednesday.
Well, two and a half hour block, because talking smack is usually about 25 minutes.
Point is, people are angry that show's being moved. Even the hardcores.
It's moved
an
hour.
The hardcores are angry.
Yeah, it's being moved an hour. That's not a big deal. It's still on. I mean, that's complaining about talking smack being moved an hour is a ridiculous complaint, but the problem,
dude, there's people in the company complaining about it because they have to stick around for another hour now.
The people who work for the company, you're right about that. I know that, and they've got to stick around another hour. Now the thing is, we all know that they're going to end up moving that thing taped before than after, because, you know, what's going to happen when you have, you know, these cruiserweight matches in big arenas that are empty with no heat, because a lot of people are going to leave early on a Tuesday night, especially on the East Coast, when they've already seen, you know, I mean, let's say with SmackDown, until John Cena comes back, you know, all SmackDown really is AJ Styles, Dean Ambrose, and Randy Orton, and maybe a little bit of Bray Wyatt, but, you know, there's nobody else that anybody really cares about on that show. And when they're done, it's like they're not going to sit there and watch Moon and the Bollywood Boys and even Cedric Alexander and Rich Swann. I mean, they're just not. So,
and what I don't understand is the Cruiserweight Classic was very popular and it was taped months in advance.
Well, weeks in advance.
So
yeah.
What's the big deal with taping the show before SmackDown when the fans are actually going to be hot for stuff and then airing it the next day? Why does it have to be live?
It doesn't. You're right. You're 100% right. Plus, The last thing they need is another hour of programming on Tuesday. Don't they frickin' realize that that third hour on Monday is dragging the company down in popularity? Yes, they do make more money out of it. And yes, you know, financially it's helping, but it's also eroding your popularity at the same time. It's like, I don't know what it is, because I think that there's like this thing of they're like fooling themselves with the idea that everything is okay, everything's great because they are profitable. But it's like, you really don't want to be eroding your popularity. And they are doing that, and they're very clearly doing that. And I think that they're taking a little bit of solace over the fact that SmackDown numbers are up, because, you know, SmackDown is live, which I guess does help, but more that it's away from football, which is a big part of that, the ratings difference is just that they're not against football on Thursday. But the 3 hours of Raw, I mean, we're getting record low ratings. I mean, like, you know, next week's not going to be a good rating either. The week after might be all right, but it's not going to get better. And I think that's the thing, that as long as they go to 3 hours, it's a lock that the ratings are going to go down, because people aren't going to watch the 3 hours. Monday was a very interesting pattern there, because, I mean, they were hurt by Halloween, and I actually don't think the number, I mean, it was the second lowest number they've ever done, or they've done since 1997, but I expected it, and I actually expected it to be lower.
Can I ask a question?
Of course you can. Always.
Okay. So Goldberg was on this show a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And he cut this great promo.
Mm-hmm.
And they saved it till the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And they largely maintained their audience for the most part over 3 hours.
Well, they actually went up in the third hour for the first time.
Okay.
In 30 weeks.
So if you ran this company and you held off Goldberg until the end of the third hour,
and it worked.
And then 2 weeks later, going up against Halloween, why would you bring out Goldberg at the beginning of the show?
And not
hold him off until the end.
I cannot even fathom that decision, because to me, it's like so beyond obvious the way to do it. And it was a real big screw up. And from the demos and some of the numbers that I've seen, it's even more of a screw up than it sounds, because what happened is, yes, the first hour did the biggest number. But with the Goldberg demo, or at least the demo that swelled the most when Billy was on the show, which was really males 12 to 40, essentially. With that demo, you know, they were the ones that stayed for the 3 hours. Now, on Halloween night, I think it's hard for me to get like the real turning point, but 12 to 17, they showed up late for this. They showed up very late for this show. Both men and girls did too.
Because they were out.
Because it's
Halloween.
They were out. A lot of people, even though if you look at the 3 hours, you go, oh my God, you know, the first hour was really big, which it was. And then hour two went down and hour three was terrible. The funny part of that is that there was a dividing line. It's basically over 40 and under 40. So the people who were over 40, they tuned in from the start of the show. And for them, most likely, a lot of them tuned out in hour two, and they really tuned out in hour three. Because who were they watching the show to see? I mean, more than anyone else was Bill Goldberg. Well, they got to see him in the first 20 minutes of the show. He was gone. They saw the angle. So they got bored with the rest of the show, and they tuned out. Now, the audience that Bill Goldberg was actually going to draw the most with, which is the younger audience, because that's the audience that he grew the most with last time, they didn't even see Bill Goldberg other than the clips, or if they TiVo'd it, watching him later, and they didn't watch him that night because TiVo viewing would be figured into the ratings on the night. You know, it won't be figured in if they watch it on Tuesday night. But the deal there was that audience picked up really big in hour two, and especially hour three, pretty much the teenagers and the adults, you know, again, to 35, 40, because if you've got young kids, if you're an adult and you got young kids, you're out too, and you're not coming back till, you know, whenever, and you're not watching, you know, you're tuning in at 9, 9:30, and you missed Bill Goldberg. So yes, On any night, it would have been a bad move to put Bill first. It would have always been a bad move. But they picked the night where it was the worst move possible, the worst night possible to do this, other than maybe Labor Day, you know, where people are out on the last weekend and they show and the sun's out late and some people are going to tune into Raw late because of that, or you know, or if it's July the 4th, if there was a Raw on July the 4th, you know, like those days would be worse. But that's pretty much it. Pretty much any other Monday, this was probably like the worst Monday to put your big attraction first. And they did it, and I can't explain why, and there's no reason other than maybe they decided, well, we got to show Paul going out in the ambulance. Like, that makes a difference to get Bill over. I don't know. There's, you know, yeah, it was a decision that I cannot make any sense out of.
Should mention, since we were talking about the Cruiserweight show, it does debut November 29th on Tuesday, 10 Eastern, right after SmackDown, a live show, 205 live.
From Columbia, South Carolina. So, Talking Smack will move to 11, and the Cruiserweights will still be on Raw. They're going to shoot angles on Monday that will lead to matches on Tuesday. That's the idea. They're going to tour with NXT for the most part, and... yeah, I don't know what else to say. Moro Ronaldo is going to be announcing with Corey Graves, which is actually the best announcing team they could probably put together. So from an announcing standpoint, it's going to be the best show in the company. But until they move it early, it's going to be a dead show for crowd reaction-wise, even though I'm sure moves-wise, it'll probably be the most spectacular show in the company and the best announced show.
Hulk Hogan had a beautiful day at the beach, he says. After Gawker and Hulk Hogan reached a $31 million settlement.
Plus, if the Gawker main site gets sold, he gets points out of that, so he could get more. Now, he isn't going to end up with $31 million, but I don't know what the deal is. Usually in a case like this, the lawyers are getting at least a third. So that's $10 million right there. And Peter Thiel is probably going to want his $10 million back. So I'm guessing Hulk's going to wind up with about $11 million out of this whole thing. Maybe he'll make maybe a little bit more. But what the hell? That's a lot of money. It really is, just for, you know.
$11 million is a lot of money.
$11 million is a lot of money. Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. I mean, he was wronged. The jury slapped those guys. You know, I mean, it was the $140 million was a ridiculous number. And I don't like the idea that it would have cost them $50 million to appeal. I think that's a ridiculous number as well, because they did have a right to appeal. At the same time, they were, you know, when you're really scummy and you get caught for being scummy and you get sued for being scummy and you are scummy, you know, that's what happens. I mean, so I know a lot of people or some people who are really aghast at this because of the idea that, you know, it's like, look at what's going to do the journalism profession. This was not journalism. If it was journalism, I would be horrified by what happened. And I'm not horrified. If it was over a story, if it was over the story of the sex tape, I'd be horrified. But putting the freaking sex tape on, even though it was only seconds, and they didn't have the right to it. He never signed off on it. You know, I mean, you could do a whole big story on it and a story on what he said, which did come out. And that's absolutely news, but you know, and they just buried themselves in that whole case anyway. So that is the end result of that. The case is closed. Thank God for that.
So what's the story with The Undertaker in the 900th edition of SmackDown?
Yeah, he's scheduled for the show in Wilkes-Barre on the 15th, the week after the election, because God knows that would be a waste if he was on next Tuesday SmackDown. Is going to do so bad in the ratings. I mean, but you have to expect it. SmackDown got hurt this week against the World Series. You know, it was essentially the same as last week. It will get killed next week, and then the 15th, it's going to bounce back, and they're going to try to make it a big show, and Undertaker's going to be there. And
you know what's amazing is many times on this show we've talked about how The Undertaker, after WrestleMania, will say he's done, and he'll lay low, and come November... Next thing you know, the guy wants to do WrestleMania. And here we are, by God, it's November, and on November 15th, he's coming back. And I can only presume he's going to do Mania.
Well, we'll know. I mean, by the way he's presented. But if he, you know, if he's going to do Mania, they should shoot the angle. If it's on SmackDown, though, I'm guessing it's Randy Orton. Because why else would Randy Orton have turned?
Well, could be.
Could be AJ. Could be AJ, could be Randy Orton. They've already done Bray Wyatt. I don't think it'll be him.
I would bet of the two, it'll be Randy Orton.
I do too, because they just turned Randy Orton, so it makes sense. And at the turn of Randy Orton under normal circumstances, if you think about it, it makes no sense because they're so imbalanced on the babyface side with Cena gone. So I'm thinking that, you know, Undertaker's wrestled Randy Orton before, though.
Well, yeah, well, my point is, like, I don't want to sit here and have people think that I'm saying that AJ is a dangerous worker or anything like that. But with Randy Orton at WrestleMania, you're guaranteed about as safe a match as you can have when you're 51 years old and you just got hip surgery.
Yeah.
If I were in that state, I would choose Randy Orton over AJ Styles.
You know what? I wouldn't. Because with AJ Styles, you got a chance to like tear the house down.
You do. But you also got to do a lot of moving and you just got hip surgery.
Yeah, but AJ's a phenomenal worker. You know, like you don't have to move as much as you think. I mean, AJ can do it for you. I mean, Randy Orton's a good worker in his own way, but it's they ain't gonna. You know, they could have a really good match with Randy Orton, but they could have a really boring match with Randy Orton as well, depending on a lot of circumstances. With AJ Styles, I mean, it's just like I think that with AJ Styles at WrestleMania, I think it's impossible to have a bad match. He's just that good.
The other issue is if you watch the SmackDown show and you look at the booking, I would guess that they may do AJ Styles, John Cena for his 16th world title.
Yes, I could definitely see that. And I would actually expect that. And that's where John Cena would probably win it. So yeah. Because AJ Styles hasn't beaten John Cena over and over again. For John Cena not to win the championship. I mean, this obviously the story is set up for John Cena to win the championship. I think it's so funny that, like, you know, all the time, you know, Rick was always, calling himself the 16-time champion and everything. And now that Cena's going to, you know, tie the record, Rick's going like, it's at least 18 and maybe as much as 21, which is exactly what it is. I mean, there's no way when you go through the list of Ric Flair's career that you can come up with, like, 18 is the smallest number that you can come up with. You can argue 19, 20, 21. I've seen people argue 23, depending on how you but the two ones that they don't count, which is the Fujinami one, which just absolutely happened, and the Harley Race one, which absolutely happened. I mean, it's just like you can't not argue those two. I mean, it's just, but, you know, they don't count it because the history when it happened didn't count the Harley Race one. This is a New Zealand and Singapore one from in 84. They didn't, because it was not approved by the NWA Board of Governors. Harley just, you know, Harley and Steve Ricard just asked Rick to do a favor, and Rick did it, and then Rick won it back. And it happened, but it wasn't supposed to be known. I mean, I know a guy who was actually on that show. On that tour, actually, you do too. And I remember when he came back and he didn't tell me about it. I actually found out because it was in the Japanese magazines, like about a week later. And it's like, wait a minute, there's Harley Race with the belt. And then like they said, yeah, you know, we were there and it happened and we were all told not to tell anybody, but it got out. So, I mean, so Harley, I guess, told everyone, like, don't tell anyone about this, but you got Japanese photographers there. What do you expect? So, but the, you know, Fujinami one was only in front of a sold out Tokyo Dome. And I was at that one too. And it's kind of like, how do you deny a match at the sold out Tokyo Dome as a title change? You know, I know that in the way that it aired on WCW television, you know, they did the Dusty Finish deal, which is what they did. And they explained it on U.S. television that it wasn't a title change. But in Japan, I mean, it was freaking front page of the freaking newspaper the next day with giant pictures of Fujinami winning the championship. And it happened, you know, I mean, and Fujinami was declared the NWA champion, not the WCW champion, but the NWA champion. And he came to St. Pete and Flair beat him and won the title back. I mean, how do you not count that one? So, anyway.
What'd you think of SmackDown?
How many straight weeks can they do AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose?
I've been noting that we have at least three times, if I recall correctly, they've done the last chance angle. It's overkill now.
Yeah, you want it. I thought the match was really good, just like last week. That was good. The Ellsworth thing, I mean, I don't know if they're turning him or not, but I certainly was. He was going heel on me by the end. I was just like, I was getting tired of him. He was like, I don't know if it was jumping the shark, James Ellsworth, or they're going to turn him heel, James Ellsworth. But, you know, I was getting so sick of him by really the first time he was on the show. This first segment he's really, really good at what he's doing. I think, you know, he's great, but it was, I was getting tired of him, or just rubbing me the wrong way, you know, where, you know, he was being a heel. And then the thing at the end, even though he helped Dean win the match and everything. But, you know, Dean had to win that match. Trying to think what else they had on the show. I mean, just Randy Orton and Kane sucked. And I don't remember the Miz and Daniel Bryan segment was really good. Miz was freaking great on that segment, as was Daniel Bryan. But when that segment's over, it's just like, and a couple of people even remarked this to me. It's like, they're going so strong in that direction. And it's like, why are they doing that? Because they can't pay it off. Because they are not going to clear Daniel Bryan. I mean, that's not a work. It's not a swerve. They're not clearing the guy. I mean, they can do an arm wrestling match. They can play darts or whatever they can do, you know, but they're not doing a wrestling match.
I hope it's darts. That's what we need.
Yeah, or they could do
darts. Darts is very popular.
They could do musical chairs. They could do whatever. But, I mean, I like the segment. And I love the Miz. Yeah, I think the Miz is just great. You know, the way it was, you know, that whole thing of like, you know, where he's sitting there expecting to be named to the team and not named on the team. And, you know, you can see it coming. Anyone can see it coming. It's the most transparent thing in the world. And it had, because of that, it had all the chances of just being terrible. But Miz was like so perfect in how he played it. And Daniel Bryan announced it really well. And then the explanation of how you pussied out of that match last week, so we don't want you on the team because we need real men, was so great. So I like that segment too. As far as the tag team stuff, yeah, you know, whatever. The Natalya thing with the, you know, it's like Michael Hayes can, you know, recite, you know, 40-year-old songs and have a good promo. Actually, 50-year-old songs in the case of Respect, right? 67, 65. I don't know. I guess it's something for Natalya. It gives her something to do. She's the coach. And I don't know. What else is on the show? I mean, it was better. It's better than Raw. That's
for damn
sure.
They had the Headbangers. They had the Becky title match announcement.
Well, Alexa beat Becky, but that makes sense because they're doing the title match this next.
I thought Alexis and Carmella did a very good job on the Alexa and Carmella.
The promo thing. The promo was good.
They did a very good job.
Yeah. The promo was good, and Becky was very good in the ring when she was in the ring for that match. As far as her comeback on the hot tag, you know, that wasn't too bad at all. Who Jordan and Gable beat? The Spirit Squad.
That's right. They beat the Spirit Squad, and then we had the Headbangers.
And the Headbangers lost to Usos. Yeah, the Spirit. I mean, the Jason Jordan and Chad Gable. They need to get those guys going because they're not going right now.
All right, take us through this Lucha Underground.
All right, it wasn't too bad because the main event was quite good. So it opened with Dario Cueto was going to spin the wheel for Matanza's opponent for this week, and it landed on Dario's choice. So Dario said that Rey Mysterio had already has a match tonight, so I'm not going to pick him. And he goes, I could always pick Pentagon, but Matanza's already beat him, so I'm not picking him either. So he chose Cortez Castro, who, of course, Joey Ryan outed as being an undercover cop. So Cortez Castro comes out, and his arm is in a cast because Pentagon broke his arm. So he's in there with one arm against Matanza, and he did get a comeback where Matanza broke his arm that was already broken, and the cast came off. So he used his left arm, which is the good arm, and he was hitting Matanza with the cast a few times, and he used a kendo stick there, but Matanza ended up stomping on his bad arm and beating him. This was a really quick match. And then Dario Cueto made fun of him afterwards and goes, I didn't know that you were still hurt. You need to get plenty of rest under the covers and then come back, you rat, like that. And then he said that Aztec Warfare is in 2 weeks. So then they had a backstage segment with Dario Cueto and Joey Ryan, and they're just laughing about Castro. And Dario goes to Joey, I guess they didn't teach him how to fight monsters back at the police academy, and they're just laughing. This was actually pretty good. Dario Cueto was on fire on this show. Tremendous. Then Son of Havoc and Masquerita Sagrada came, and one of the things about Masquerita Sagrada, besides being short, is that evidently he cannot speak. He whispers in Son of Havoc's ear, so whatever he does, Son of Havoc can understand him, but he cannot speak himself. So he wanted Famous B in a singles match. And Dario said that Famous B has retired. But he said, and then Son of Havoc goes, he just wrestled a couple of weeks ago. So when Dario realized that, he goes, okay, what we're going to do is you're going to have a match, this is Son of Havoc, against Dr. Wagner Jr. And if you beat Dr. Wagner Jr., Masquerita gets his match with Famous B, and you can name the stipulation. But if Dr. Wagner beats you, Masquerita still gets his match with Famous B, but Dr. Wagner gets to pick the stipulation. So okay. Then we have Prince Puma interview, and he noted that beating Mil Muertes isn't enough because Mil Muertes killed Mr. Conan, and he will not stop until he does the same, other than the fact that Mil Muertes already died many times and keeps coming back to life, so it kind of seems fruitless to kill him at this point. But they're going to have a casket match anyway, so I think that's in a couple of weeks, maybe next week, I don't know. So they set that up. Dr. Wagner Jr. and Son of Havoc. Son of Havoc beat him with a shooting star press, and just knowing Dr. Wagner. By the way, Dr. Wagner's in phenomenal shape for his age. 51 years old. Dude's in great shape.
Yes, he is.
So Havoc beats him with a clean. And Dr. Wagner Jr. hates doing jobs. So he must have freaking hated doing a job on TV for a guy who's a nobody. Man, he must have just been pissed. But he did it. And Son of Havoc then said, next week you're going to have a Believer's Backlash match, which is a lumberjack strap match. But it's not going to be straps. They told the people that any weapon that you can bring, because all weapons that the fans use are legal. So that's the deal there. And then we had Rey and Chavo, which is the Loser Leaves Lucha match. And it was quite a good match. They could really telegraph that Chavo Sr. was going to be involved in the finish, because they showed Chavo Sr. at ringside about 45 times during this match. And at one point, and this was really well done, Rey came off the apron with a Hurricanrana. Chavo's on the floor and flips him, and he falls right into his father and knocks his father over in his chair. So Rey
that
has...
That sounds dangerous.
It was sort of, but I mean, the tie was tremendous. It was perfect. So then the crowd's really hot for this match. They're chanting, this is awesome, even before it was awesome, but it did get awesome later. And they set up the 619, and Chavo jumped in the ring with a chair, Chavo Sr. And he pauses, and then he hits his own son with a chair. And everyone's going, oh my God, what did he do? He turned on his own son. But in fact, the referee disqualified Rey for Chavo Sr. interfering. So Chavo Jr. won the match, and Rey had to leave forever. However, Dario Cueto came out, and he yelled at Marty Elias, because why would you call a DQ in a match this important? This is ridiculous. So he announced that the match is being restarted with no DQ, and Chavo Sr. is furious. His plan has been foiled, and Rey's taking it out on Chavo and Chavo Sr. Gives the 619 to Chavo Sr. Then he does the Thez press on off the top on Chavo Jr., which Chavo Jr., actually it was a Thez press turned into a half crab by Chavo Jr. This was a really well done spot. You know, Ray barely gets to the ropes. Chavo pulls him to the center. Chavo finally gets out. Chavo ends up winning with a 619, a springboard splash. Ray wins. So Chavo is gone. And they question at the end, is this the end of the Guerrero dynasty in wrestling? Are there going to be any more Guerreros? So
sounds to me like there's going to be a new Guerrero coming in.
There isn't. There's no more Guerreros. The only Guerrero is the son-in-law, and he's in WWE.
Man, oh man.
What's his name? Aiden English. And he's going nowhere, too.
Well, you know, you bring in a fake Guerrero.
They could do that, but they haven't done it yet.
So what's going on with ACH?
ACH and Ring of Honor are going to be done, if they're not done at this minute. They've agreed to a release. He's essentially getting fired, but it's not like he's not happy there either. So it's kind of like a mutual parting of the ways. And the paper had not been signed as of this morning, but it's probably going to be signed maybe today or tomorrow or the next day or something. So he's gone, but he's gone. He's done. They were not happy about what he said at that show, and they told him, and then he said he was frustrated there. And when all was said and done, they both decided that it's over. So I presume that means, or at least he's hoping that he's going to get more stuff in Japan. I saw his stuff in the tournament, and him and Taiichi Ishimori are a great tag team, just a great team. So hopefully they get more. He gets more work there. I don't, whether it would be Noah or New Japan, I don't know. By the way, you know that the bomb is coming on Friday night or Saturday morning, whatever, on the Power Struggle show. And everyone's wondering about the bomb and everything. And Minoru Suzuki did an interview today, and he said that, how do you phrase it? He made a reference about, there's a bomb about to go off. So, but Minoru Suzuki is booked on a Noah show several hours away from Osaka. So,
sounds like you made no show a Noah event.
No, it's the global tournament. He's not going to no show. I think that he's not going to be there. I think that it'd probably just be a video of them announcing his return. It's the only thing I can come up with, because he can't be in two places at one time. And that's another song, by the way. So he can't miss the Noah tournament. I mean, he can't miss. This is the global league. This is like their G1. He can't miss a match there. So I'm guessing it's going to be the whole crew coming back. Suzuki, Zuka, Davey Boy, Lance Archer, and Taiichi, Desperado. Oh, God. The junior heavyweight division was doing so good in New Japan, but they're going to bring in freaking Taiichi. I mean, I guess his ring entrance is okay, but man, I don't know. Taichi's like the worst junior, though. He just does, I don't know. He does nothing in the ring.
So what's the rest of the weekend schedule?
Yeah, so Power Struggle, which is a pretty interesting show. It is sold out in advance, so that's a good sign, with Naito and Jay Lethal as the main event for the Intercontinental title. Obviously, Naito's getting his win back there. Then Hiroshi Tanahashi and Seiya Sanada. And Sanada won their match in G1. So most likely Tanahashi's going to win that one. And most likely, the way I sense it, it sets up Tanahashi against Naito for the Tokyo Dome. And they'll probably announce that, because they will probably announce, they'll probably announce like much of the Tokyo Dome card, I think. The show's Saturday, so I'm guessing by Monday, they'll probably do the press conference around Monday, where they'll announce the tag team tournament, the tag team title match, which it's going to be, they're going to have a tag team title match with Tama Tonga and Tangaloa against Yoshihashi and Tomohiro Ishii. So the tag tournament, you know, the winners of the tag tournament will face the winners of this match at the Tokyo Dome. So that won't be announced, but I'm figuring they'll announce Tanahashi and Naito if that's the match, and they'll probably announce whoever Shibata is going to wrestle. Shibata is wrestling Evil for the Never Championship, so whatever happens there and how that thing ends, that'll build up a match for Tokyo Dome. And see, the junior heavyweights, well, they're not going to have the so Ishimori and ACH are wrestling Rocky Romero and Beretta, and the winner of that match wins the tournament and will either be in a multiple team match or in a regular tag team match against the Young Bucks, likely at the Tokyo Dome. There's going to be an eight man with the Elite, which is the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, and Adam Cole, and they're going to face. It's going to be Okada, Will Ospreay, Ghetto, and I think it's Hirooki Goto. So that'll be there. So those are the top matches on that one. So then Friday night will be the Liam McGeary and Phil Davis light heavyweight championship match, and likely another angle with Tito Ortiz and Chael Sonnen.
God, I hope it's better than the first one.
I know, that first one wasn't really good.
Oh, my God.
It started out like the first 30 seconds were good, and then it just went to
hell.
Yeah, because
Chael was awesome. And then Tito was so hilariously horrible.
He was so bad.
I mean, he was so bad. Yeah. He was worse than Dasha on SmackDown, which I don't even know if that's possible.
Dasha, that's another one. It's like, do they like... they have to like have 10 women who look similar. None of, you know what I mean? And it's like you have to be a brunette and look like that to do interviews backstage. It's so freaking weird. I mean, it's like, you know who like the best interviewer backstage is right now?
Renee.
No, Jeremy Borash. Oh, Renee's really good too.
About WWE.
But I'm just saying.
Yeah, Borash is like Gene Okerlund.
Yeah, I mean, Jeremy Borash is the best one in the business right now. And it's like, and he's not a freaking brunette model, you know what I mean?
No, he's a fellow who's good at the job of a yeah. backstage interviewer. Novel concept.
Yeah, no, Renee's great. But they lucked into her because she's a pretty girl and she's actually like really good at it and really, you know, she knows what the hell she's talking about and it's natural. But just because like Renee can do it and she's really good at it, it doesn't mean that you take, okay, Renee Young's really good, so what we should do is we should get all kinds of, like, models and ex-newswomen that are really pretty, and we'll give them this job, even though they can't do it, because we lucked into one after, you know, 15 years of trying to find one and failing, like, one person after another, we finally got one that works. So let's go back to what we did for the previous 15 years with trying out one woman after another. You know what's funny is, TNA had like, remember TNA had like those two women that were the really good, the blondes, and I don't even remember their names anymore. Not Goldilocks, she sucked, but the one after Goldilocks, what was her name? She was like really good, and then for whatever reason, she had a problem and they had to get rid of her, and then they brought another one, and she wasn't even too bad either. Like TNA has.
I have no memory of them.
Oh, I remember them, but I mean, the thing is like, TNA actually had better luck, other than Renee, with the same thing that WWE was doing, which is quite weird because WWE is...
Not really, because they were probably looking for girls that could conduct a backstage interview, as opposed to, let's just get some good-looking girls, give them stupid questions, tell them to not do anything. Like, Dasha did not change her face. I'm positive that she was like a wax statue. Didn't change her... She didn't blink. She didn't raise her eyebrows. She didn't smile. She didn't frown. She didn't change her expression one bit when she interviewed AJ Styles.
But I loved when she said James Ellis. For whatever reason, I thought it was like just the classic of part of the story where you have this woman who, you know, and it could be a guy who's no good, but it happens to be a woman who's no good because people get mad at me when I rank on women, whatever reason.
Hey, believe me.
Even though
the guys
do it on
are
guys,
no good too.
I know, I rank on guys 10 times more than women, but whenever I do it on a woman, it's like I'm a sexist. Anyway, so she's out there, and it was just like the most fitting thing that she botches the name of the guy who they're building the whole show around, and names him, you know, something else. And there's Dean Ambrose just nonchalantly correcting her. You know, he did a good job on that, you know. By the way, you know, so that was pretty cool. Where were we before all this? Oh, so
the rest of the weekend.
Yeah. So that's Friday night in Bellator, and then Saturday is UFC from Mexico City with Tony Ferguson and Rafael Dos Anjos. So Rafael Dos Anjos, watch him go win. But I mean, Tony Ferguson's been on a roll, but in his last fight, I mean, he nearly lost that fight many times. That was like one of the best fights ever. Actually, almost every Tony Ferguson fight's one of the best fights ever. He's on a run of incredible fights. And God, when he destroyed Edson Barboza on that show I saw in Vegas in December, that fight was awesome. Anyways, so he could get a championship. Well, whoever wins between Dos Anjos and Tony Ferguson easily could get the winner of the Eddie Alvarez and Conor fight. Dos Anjos switched camps and started his own gym. Now, I know when guys start their own gym and open up a new business, that is a very, very stressful time. And most of the time you lose after when you're doing this. I've seen guys one after another do this. That doesn't mean for sure he'll lose, but I think his odds of losing go up. Now, the one thing with Dos Anjos is I mean, he's been on a tear killing everybody for a long time. And I don't, you know, I mean, Eddie Alvarez just got the punch in, and that shit happens. But when I watched, like, the Eddie Alvarez-Dos Anjos fight, like, there was nothing in that fight that made me think that Eddie Alvarez necessarily was the better fighter. He just got the punch in, and, that happens in fights at times. And Dos Anjos, you know, I mean, he ran through Pettis and Cerrone, who are, like, these are good guys that he ran through. So he's a dangerous guy, and Ferguson's just this crazy guy who does everything you're not supposed to do. He's way too aggressive, but somehow he always seems to win his fights other than, he even won the last one. So, yeah, he just seems to win his fights. So I think that will be pretty good. And the other thing with the Mexico City, for whatever it is, you know, whether it's the water or whatever, the Mexican fighters that when they put on the undercard in Mexico City, the Mexico City undercards are always awesome. So I think that... I think this will probably be a pretty good show, and we may see some guys get real tired, because that's the other thing about Mexico City shows is the guys who can't afford to be down there for a long period in camp, which is everyone who's not making tons and tons of money, which means everyone on this card, they come in late and they gas out. So we may be seeing some really tired fighters on this show.
All right, let's do some mailbag questions. Mailbag at WrestlingObserver.com. Moses here says, has WWE ever tried to get into the South Korean market? The country is economically thriving.
They've run South Korea. Not lately, but they've run it. Yeah.
I think he's wondering if they've ever attempted
They're on TV there.
Go full bore.
They're on TV there. They just, you know, for whatever reason, you know, I don't know why they're not going... whenever they went to Japan in July, they didn't go there this year, but they've been there.
This person says, although we know the viewership figures of TNA in the US and the UK, does Dave know what the average viewership is of TNA in Canada on the Fight Network?
No, I do not know, but it's not big.
We talked about on this show their explanation as to why they are no longer on Challenge.
Oh my fucking God. Oh my God! I mean, I guess they feel they have to say something, but
no, they did not need to say anything.
Oh my God!
Rarely has a statement ever made a company come off worse. They claimed.
Oh no! You think that what about when they cried about AJ and Gallows and Anderson? That they came off so bad on that.
That was bad, but I mean, come on, you're off Challenge at a time where the only money you've got coming in is international TV deals, and you're going to try and tell us with a straight face that it's because of spoilers that you're voluntarily no longer airing there. Give me a break.
Well, they said a thing about did you see the statement in the lawsuit about the reason that they had cash flow problems was because they got off Destination America. Did you see that statement? That was even better. They got off Destination America. They weren't kicked off Destination America. They voluntarily got off Destination America, like Challenge, and took a deal where they're getting no money from a deal that the reason they cash problems, they took a deal because they were no longer getting money for their thing. They took a deal because we needed to have control of our lucrative digital content because because Destination America in the deal had, you know, was part of, you know, had the control of the digital rights as well. And I guess Pop TV didn't get the digital rights, those valuable digital rights of TNA. They had to get back so they could go they had to go broke because they could keep their digital rights.
Eric here says, are the native and foreign New Japan wrestlers paid every 2 weeks, or do they get paid after the tours?
You know what? I don't know the answer, but I know traditionally it was at the end of the tour you would get paid, so I'm presuming it's that, but I actually don't know the answer for sure. But when I would go to Japan, but this is 20 years ago, yes, it was the last day of the tour you got paid for the whole tour.
This person says, when it turns out to be an actual tainted supplement, how come USADA doesn't reveal the company? This would at least warn fighters to stay away from
the
company.
They will reveal the company, yes, when it comes out. The John Jones thing is pretty interesting because, there's obviously an issue here because he did come up with a supplement, but USADA gave a punishment and John wouldn't accept it. So that's why they're in arbitration right now. And the arbitrator will rule what the thing is within 30 days. So that tells me that if USADA, you know, obviously USADA wanted to punish him, because if they didn't punish him, there'd be no need for arbitration, which means that they think there's some flim-flamming going on and they don't want to be flim-flammed. And so they're going to try and you know, I don't want to say they're trying to flim-flam the arbitrator. I'm just saying that they, USADA clearly doesn't fully buy this, because if they fully bought this, that we would be having no issues. So I don't know. You know, I mean, I had heard the rumor, I don't know it's true, that the supplement in question was one that John never put down in his forms that he took, which, if it's me and I'm at USADA and he comes up with this tainted supplement, but it's one that he never said he used, I don't know that I'm buying it very well. I don't know. What about you?
Well, we've talked about it before. You got to disclose.
You got to disclose. And so with the Brock thing, Brock's hearing was supposed to be on the 10th.
I mean, if you don't disclose and you got money, just buy a shit ton of supplements and test them all until you find one that's tainted.
I will give him credit. I was impressed that they found one that was tainted with the two things he was caught with.
That is impressive. That does in fact suggest that maybe the guy is telling the truth, because
I'm not.
This is crazy.
I don't rule out that just because it's like again, haven't been around wrestling, okay, and been around people who are completely full of it, okay, like, and lots of people in wrestling are full of it, but almost every single person that's full of it in wrestling often tells the truth, but they often lie. So just because someone has no credibility doesn't mean that they're for sure guilty. It's like, you know, but if they didn't put the supplement down, if that's what it is, and I don't know that that's what it is, but there's something, obviously there is something going on, because if there wasn't, we wouldn't be having this discussion. He'd be scot-free. Or he would take like a 3-month, you know, a small suspension, which he knew he was going to have to get a small suspension anyway, because you are responsible for what goes in your body. By the way, do you hear about Coachman on Ric Flair's podcast?
No.
Coachman was complaining that they pulled John from that fight with Cormier because he tested positive. It's like, what the, how can you even say something as stupid as that?
What was his rationale?
I don't know what his rationale was. Just, oh, that, you know, I mean, he was trying to say, like, steroids don't help you that much anyway, or something like that.
Well, that's a bad rationale.
Yeah.
This person here says, for about the last year and a half, WWE has had their champions go to the ring first. It irritated me to begin with. It hit a breaking point on Tuesday when AJ entered the number one contenders match first. Is there a method to Vince's madness? Why do the champions come out first more often?
I have no idea. I mean, traditionally, because traditionally the champion always comes out second, that Vince just feels that, harumph, I'm going to do it different. You know, I mean, that, it could be as simple as that. He wants to control the universe and he doesn't want to, you know, and in the big picture, you know what? It doesn't matter. But there's a reason, but also there's a reason it's always been done this way, because you build anticipation and it makes the champion, you know, seem bigger. And, you know, so there's a reason to do it the way it's always been done, you know, kind of like the way you build a card, the way it's always been done, and they mess up and they don't do it anymore. And you get cards like Sunday's card, where you have these matches that die that are in the wrong position because they're in the wrong position. And, you know, when you, you know what? Okay. I hate to say it like this, especially, but I do believe that if Vince McMahon was running, let's say he was running Chevrolet, right? He would try to find a car with, you know, like, you know how those Flintstone wheels, you know, that they're boxes instead of circles?
Sure.
That he would try to figure out a way to make the wheels of the car squares instead of circles, even though circles work better, just because he's tired of circles.
Well, we can only hope that one of these days he invests in a car company and we can find out.
No, we I don't want to. Every time he invests in something outside of wrestling, it's never good.
Well, you know, maybe square wheels is the next big thing.
Maybe.
I don't know. This person here says, did Noah's new owners buy stock from the New Japan owners or from others? What does this mean going forward for the New Japan Noah talent exchange and feud?
As best I can tell, it's business as usual and nothing's changed. But they did not buy, as best I can tell, they also did not buy the stock that New Japan has. They bought other stock, the other stock.
This person says, I've been watching matches from All Japan Women in the 80s, especially the Chigusa Nagoya and Dump Matsumoto feud. Can you talk a little bit about the historical significance of the feud? It seems to me that no one else in the world were having matches this intense at the time, not even the men. Their hair versus hair match from 85 is especially wild.
God, talk about heat. This match is incredible heat. Yeah, it was just a hot, you know, the women's wrestling at that time was super hot. I mean, they were on Sunday or Saturday afternoons, like at 1 o'clock, and they were doing a 14 rating at that time slot, which is just absolutely ridiculous when you think about it. Because I remember when it was on, they were doing essentially the same rating as the NFL was doing in the United States for freaking women's wrestling. But, you know, they were so over. I mean, I remember when I went there in 84. If you were like walking down the street of like in their shops, you could not walk a block without some photos in a store window of the Crush gals. And I mean, there was Dump Matsumoto stuff too. You know, I mean, I saw like, you know, she was in commercials and you know, like the poster commercials and things like that on the benches and, you know, things like that. But the Crush gals, like every record store, they were just everywhere. So Chigusa and Dump was the big rivalry, the top babyface against the top heel. And I think they did, God, I'm trying to remember. I think they did two hair matches. I think that Chigusa lost the first one and then she won the second one. And they were bloodbaths because the girls would juice there. The girls would do everything the men would do. You know, there was no, like at first it was like kind of weird to me watching women juice, like deep juice, you know, with the blood everywhere, but it was just, that's just what it was. It taught me a lot about essentially, because your initial reaction as an American going over there seeing that, like there's something wrong with these women slicing their foreheads. And then when you start thinking about it, you go, you know what? They're just doing exactly what the men do. And you know, the men don't do it anymore either. And it probably is gross, but the point is that if I can accept it with the men, there's no reason not to accept it with the women, and it's what they wanted to be. And these women were better workers than the men. I mean, Chigusa was one of the best baby faces I've ever seen. Just baby face worker. The crowd was with her. Yeah, because I know that when the Toyota Yamada match that I saw in 92, which is still the best live match I've ever seen, Yamada lost her hair. Yamada, growing up, her idol was Chigusa. So her goal, when she was a little kid, she saw the Chigusa dump match where Chigusa lost her hair. So when she became a big star, the thing she wanted to do more than anything, maybe not more than anything, but one of her goals in her career was to get her head shaved in a hair versus hair match. So that was actually the rationale of the Toyota Yamada hair match, was because Yamada wanted to get her head shaved like her idol Chigusa, and figured that, you know, Toyota would be the person she could have the greatest hair versus hair match with. And she was right. They had like the greatest hair versus hair match you've ever seen. So that was, but yeah, the Crush Girls, and usually with Dump Matsumoto and Crane U, and then Dump Matsumoto and Bull Nakano. It was just a wild, crazy, super heated, super popular deal there, especially with the women. Not even women. I mean, like, because it really wasn't even adult women. I mean, the audience was so much like 13 to 20-year-old girls just packing those places, screaming. I mean, what an atmosphere at those shows. It was awesome.
All right, everybody. On that note, we're going to wrap it up. If you head to the front page of WrestlingObserver.com, the new Observer is up right now, so head up there and check that out. There are all sorts of stories.
Freaking giant issue. I mean, this the there's so much business stuff in there between the WWE stuff. I you know, when I went through the WWE business, I mean, it's like, it's, we've already talked about it, but the one thing, and you'll see it, that is really amazing, it'll be amazing to you more than anyone because you actually run a business like this, is the number of people who cancel the network. I mean, it actually like blows my mind, the number of people who cancel. I mean, the fact is they still get, you know, a lot of people also start subscribe again and everything, but it's just amazing, like the churn. It's like I never would have guessed it. No, I've never heard of anyone else who has it. They claim everyone does, but I've never seen it anywhere. I mean, 30% over 3 months?
That is a ridiculous churn.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't even know the answer, because to me, it's like the WWE Network at $9.99.
The only thing I can figure is a lot of wrestling fans, more than other services, will do the free trial with maybe like a gift card, or I don't know, cancel, sign up for a new email address, and do the free trial again, and it's just like,
yeah, but
thousands and thousands of people every month doing this over and over and over again.
Yeah, but what I'm talking about, I'm not even including the people who get in free, the people who subscribe for free and then cancel and don't pay and then switch. And all that. They wouldn't even be figured in what I'm talking about. That 30% is the paid. The 30% of the paid subscribers within the 3 month period will cancel. And I don't understand that, because again, when I look at that service, to me, for $9.99, I get my money's worth and then some, just for the pay-per-views. You know, I mean, even like, you know, even if it's one a month and not two, but it's like, you know, you get the pay-per-views, you get NXT takeovers, which are always great shows. The pay-per-view shows are often great shows. I mean, they're not always great shows, but they've had some great shows this year. The NXT television show, I mean, it's not as good as it was before, but I mean, even now, like the show, like last one, I didn't see tonight's show, but last Wednesday's show. I mean, when I watched it, I'm kind of sitting there and it's like, it's an entertaining hour. I mean, it was not a great show by any means, but I had no issues with it at all. And you get all those archives. If you're into history, you want to watch, you know, Ric Flair matches or you know Hulk Hogan matches or you know, Steve Austin matches or whatever. It's you know, you can't even watch all of them. I mean, it's such a great value. It really is. And so, I mean, it's not like, okay, like let's say, oh, 2,000 people canceled. Well, 2,000 people of 1.5 million, that's not, but this is 30%. And I don't understand that at all.
I don't know what to tell you, but if you want to check it out, everybody, the New Observer's up there. Stories on TNA, the Dixie Carter Billy Corgan deal, Hulk Hogan, all sorts of great stuff. So head up there.
Lots on UFC business and what's happening in their future as well. But there's a lot of UFC business stuff. Ari Emanuel had a meeting with the UFC brass, so that's all detailed in there. And kind of like plans for next year, what's going to change, what's not. One of the things is with UFC is they, to try to make profits so huge, they cut the expenses, the front office expenses. The plan is to cut them in half, which is really scary. I mean, that's why they got rid of so many high priced executives, because they wanted to cut the front office expenses in half. And it's not like there were a bunch of people in UFC that were twiddling their thumbs and just taking a check. Everybody there was working hard. So to cut that in half, it's going to be a real interesting year for UFC, especially because, you know, Ronda, Ronda was on Ellen yesterday. And she seems like she's got one foot out the door. And that company, you know, I mean, Ronda and Connor are the drivers. I mean, if you take them out of the mix, I don't know where they, you know, I mean, they're worth hundreds of millions of dollars between the two of them.
So that's in there as well. And Dave will be on Observer Live tomorrow. And lots of shows coming up. So check it out, everybody. We'll talk to you again after a while.